listening to the Supernova podcast from Joffrey Street Productions, featuring the hosts of the Cool Shite on the Tube podcast.
Tiffany Grant has a list of voice credits that would make your head spin, so if she sounds a little familiar, don't be surprised. If you've watched anime in the last 20 years, there's a great chance you would have heard her, most famously as Asuka Langley from Neon Genesis Evangelion. Matt Greenfield, Tiffany's husband, is a writer, producer, director and occasional voice actor, and has helmed well over 500 TV episodes and feature films, including such fan favourites from Gunsmith Cats to the legendary Neon Genesis Evangelion. He co-founded ADV Films and acts as vice president of production. Tiffany and Matt joined us on Saturday.
When I came around the corner and saw all the people over here, I thought we were in the wrong place. Thanks for coming. Okay. Should we?
I think, real quick, who we are, what we do. He did a nice, good introduction there. But ADV's been in business for 13 years now, released several thousand shows, about half of which seem to have included her voice somehow or other. And for those who aren't aware, 2 years ago, we did happen to get married.
Yeah. Yay! should we... We could maybe start out by saying, like, how we got into this, because usually that's the first question that everybody asks you, is how did you get into this? And maybe it's backwards if I start?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, you start, because then it leads.
Well, I started out like all of you. Right now, I was a big fan of anime and Japanese live-action films since I was a little kid. And, of course, there were no companies like ADV or Madman when I was growing up. And 13 years ago, I met a gentleman named John Ledford, and he, like I, had the vision of being able to go and pick up anime in any store that was in English or subtitled at a reasonable price. And we talked and we talked and we talked. We met one day, and 12 days later, we had a company up and running, and a month later, had licensed our first title, Devil Hunter Yoko, and we've never looked back. And, of course, now ADV, besides doing anime in North America, we're a distributor for Farscape, for Gene Roddenberry's Andromeda, Earth Final Conflict, Mutant X. We distribute Hello Kitty, So many titles. And, of course, after about a... And we have our own television network, the Anime Network. And, of course, for what most of you would know us for is so many of the shows that we localize into English are picked up by Madman down here. So some of the shows that we've done recently, that you should be aware of, are Gantz, Chrono Crusade, Noir. And right now, Tiffany and I are both working on a show called Go Danner, that will hopefully make its way down here soon. And, of course, we did a little show called Evangelion a few years ago, Bubblegum Crisis 2040, which ran on SBS here, and so much. I'm talking.
Okay. And he didn't mention that ADV also does the English language version of New Type through a related company. Yeah, New Type USA. Anyway, so they started up the company in 92 and started releasing a few titles that were done in Japanese that had English subtitles on there. And, of course, they realized that if they were going to reach a larger audience, they had to start dubbing the shows into English. And that's kind of where I come in. They put out the word to all their friends, we're going to have these auditions and hire some actors to start dubbing shows, so tell everyone that you know about it. So I got a call one day. And someone said, this friend of mine that I'd known for a long time said, hey, there's this company that John Ledford has, and they're going to start dubbing these Japanese shows. And I knew that you had done some acting, so I thought maybe you'd be interested in that. And I thought, well, yeah, that sounds great. I'd love to do that. So I called up and made an appointment to go on audition, and that's really how it all got started. I went to the very first auditions that they had, and I got hired to do the female lead on ADV's first show, and I could have fallen out of my chair today because somebody here, are you in here who had Guy? Yes. Somebody had the cover of our very first show that we dubbed, Guy Double Target. It was actually the cover from the British release. But anyway, so that's how it all got started. I just went down to the auditions, and it pretty much works the same way with, I guess, any kind of line of work. If you go in and you do a good job, they just sort of keep hiring you. And so it's been almost 12 years for me. That was in February of 94 when they dubbed their first show. So they had been around for about a year and a half before they started dubbing. And so I started in February 94 with the voice acting. And since then, I've gone on. Most of my work has been with ADV. I've also done a couple of video games. Did they release something down here called Deus Ex 2 Invisible War? Maybe? Okay. Yeah, I was in that. And also, I've done a couple of shows with Funimation, a Full Metal Alchemist, Case Closed. Anyway, but we'd be happy to answer any questions you guys have.
Okay, yes. There's a microphone so we can hear you because it's really noisy up where we are.
Testing, testing. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Welcome to Australia, anyway. Obviously, Houston's got a really rich theatrical community, or a really rich wider theatrical community, so I guess that assists ADV in finding staff and everything. We're actually big fans of your Sayuki series.
Oh, yeah.
That was a landmark for an English dub. It was so well scripted and assembled a really good team. We were just wondering what happened in that the rest of the series went to Genion. Can you shed some light on that?
Oh, okay. Well, the Genion is a division of a Japanese company called Dentsu, which is actually the single largest advertising, if I recall correctly, firm in Japan. And they bought out Pioneer Animation a couple of years ago. And the first thing Dentsu did when they took over the company was saying, well, let's see what's successful out there. Did a marketing research, and they said, oh, well, this title did well. Let's go ahead and, in Japan, finance sequels to those. So they actually just put up the money to do those because they are a huge company in Japan. So they picked up a number of titles that other companies had started, including Burn Up, the Burn Up franchise. They started with Burn Up Scramble, obviously Sayuki they picked up. So they actually funded those from the ground up so they would actually own those completely. That's how that happened. And I won't comment on the technical quality. I can tell you that the voice of Goku, Greg Ayers,
would have walked there.
He would have done it for free. He called up and asked. He said, oh, well, we'll get in touch. And next thing he heard is it was being dubbed already. So
he wanted to do it badly. I was just going to comment about Greg Ayers, who played Goku. Yeah. He was desperate to do it. Whoever got it, whoever did it, he wanted to be in it, but it didn't happen.
Yeah, just regarding your distribution in Australia, I was just wondering how you got.
Can you speak up a little? It's really loud behind us.
Yeah, just regarding your distribution in Australia, I'm just wondering how your relationship with Mad Men Entertainment started.
I think it's gone well. I wish they'd buy more.
I mean,
how did it start? As I recall, Tim at Mad Men showed up at our booth at a convention a number of years ago. I believe it was like the third or fourth Anime Expo in California, and said, hello, my name's Tim. I'm with Mad Men in Australia, and I'm interested in picking up your titles. If I recall correctly, it's exactly how it happened. One thing that I think makes the anime industry so different from any other industry is that so many of the people in this industry are actually big fans. And I think that's why there's a tighter relationship between the companies and the fans than in, say, a Hollywood picture or whatever. And I think the Mad Men people, all the ones I've met so far, have been very, very into anime in general.
Yeah, one thing I've been interested in, when you consider all the founding English anime companies, like Animego, Streamline, CPM, Manga Entertainment, nowadays they've basically become specialised boutique companies. What made AD Vision so different that they've been able to basically become the market leader?
I think the answer to that question is kind of what we were just talking about, is that the people within ADV, we had a lot of people who were fans, and we understood a little bit better what people were actually looking for. And I think Animego, they started off as fans, but they're fans of very specific series. Obviously, Carl Masek and Streamline were looking for something that was a mass market. The same thing with Manga Entertainment. They were looking for a mass market product and trying to go for things that were kind of either so shocking that people would notice, or things that were you could put on television. And ADV started off with Devil Hunter Yoko and went through a lot of more esoteric stuff. We were the first ones to really do a lot of OVAs and things that were just a little different. And I think the fact that we were doing that and taking titles that everyone thought had no market. In fact, when we bought our first title, Devil Hunter Yoko, we were talking with people at Toho Pictures, and they're like, are you sure you really want to buy this? You know, it's only 40 minutes long. And we're like, yes, yes, we know what it is. We really want to buy it. And I think we believed in it, and we're always willing to say, okay, sometimes you put out a title just because you really like the title, and sometimes that title does really well. And sometimes it does okay, but it's a title that we really like. So as long as we're doing the things we like, we're happy. And a lot of companies, I think, look more at the balance books. Would you not agree?
Yeah.
Tiffany, you've played so many anime characters. Do you have a favorite role?
You know, that's a question I get asked a lot, and it's very difficult for me to pick one favorite one because they're really so different. I know down here you might not have gotten as many of the titles, but it's hard for me to only say one. There's several of them for different reasons. I know you don't really get Hello Kitty down here, but I'm a huge Hello Kitty fan. And when ADV got to dub the latest Hello Kitty series last year, and I got to be the writer on that show, and I also got to do three of the main characters, so that was just like some kind of dream come true that I could get to work on something like that. And of course, getting to do really landmark shows like Evangelion and Noir had a big impact on me as well. And something like Excel Saga, which I think has done fairly well down here, that I had so much fun doing Excel Saga, but that was because I got to play like five different characters. So it wasn't an aspect of doing just one, it was getting to do so many. And really one of the things that I love about voice acting is that I can be so many different characters and different kinds of characters, which I would be when you're doing live action film, you're so much more limited by what you can do.
But a real favorite's Oscar.
When you first started your company and you were starting to distribute your anime product, do you find it was hard to break into the adult community, or had shows like Robotech already paved the way for you?
In the U.S., Robotech had definitely put a seed there, but of course Robotech was something that was shown on TV. And the idea of buying something that was made expressly for home video was still fairly new. And yes, it was a long, hard road to hoe. We originally started off just doing subtitled only shows, and we did that for about a year and a half, and finally said, okay, there's definitely a fan base who likes these shows, but let's go ahead and experiment and do one dubbed in English and see if that... And that was really the magic key, because a lot of retail stores were very, very hesitant about something that was in a foreign language with subtitles only. But as soon as there was an English dubbed version available, the stores jumped on and said, okay, now we understand it. But it took a couple of years. I mean, from when we started, the growth was fascinating. We released one title in 1992, released five titles in 93, we released 14 titles in 94, and in 95 it was 30 something, and now we release 15 to 20 titles a month. So it's a staggering amount of anime that comes out, and that's just ADV. In the average month, there's over 100 titles released in the States now. And each of those is multiple episodes. So it's been a slow process, and we've been watching it. But it did take a while. It took a long time. And fortunately, there were some people in the United States who really helped. A critic by the name of Roger Ebert was very, very big about pushing titles like Akira, as well as the Japanese kaiju films like Gamera was very influential in opening up a market. Charles Solomon with the LA Times was another. So it took a while. It's still not as big as I think it's going to ultimately be, but it's amazing the difference between what it is now and what it was.
You have comments?
Yeah. 2 days ago, I was having an omelet made for breakfast, and the chef started asking me about what I did. And he said, yeah, sometimes I watch those children shows. So, yeah, a lot of people still don't get what it is. I get that all the time. If people are not don't know what about the industry, they think cartoons are all for children. They are all Pokemon. So, yeah. It's broadened, though. I've seen that a lot, that people more understand that there are all different kinds of shows, from shows that you would show your little daughter there up to, you know, things you wouldn't even want her to see when she was 20.
Hi, I've got two questions. Yeah. Firstly, what was it like working on Evangelion?
Well, it's funny, because I do get asked that a lot about working on Evangelion, and the thing that you have to understand is when we started dubbing it, it was just coming off of TV in Japan, so it wasn't this huge, colossal, international, mega something that it is now. It was like, oh, it's a show, and it was really popular, and it was a good show, but we had no idea that it was going to turn into this thing. So it was very exciting. I really liked playing the character when I was doing it. Back at that time, ADV was doing two episodes on one videotape. So they would record two episodes, and then they'd go and work on something else. And then they would record two more episodes, and they'd work on something. So they kept telling me that I had this part in this Evangelion thing. And I knew they were recording the show, and they would do a recording session, and I wasn't in it. And finally I said, look, can I come in and just do like some background stuff or something, you know? No, you can't do that. You have to wait. Well, when does my character come in? Episode 8. And I'm like, oh yeah, she really must be some important character if she doesn't come in until episode 8. So I waited, you know, very doubtful of this whole thing. And I mean, once I got to work on it, and I was pleasantly surprised, and I was very excited by the depth of the character and the quality of the story.
All right, thank you. And in Excel Saga, who did you play?
Oh, in Excel Saga. Oh, I love Excel Saga. In Excel Saga, probably my favorite character that I played in that show was a little boy called Sandora. His father was Pedro. Pedro was the one who was always going, no! Yeah, so I was his little boy, Sandora. And I was also Misaki Matsuya. She was the really voluptuous babe. They always did those close-up shots on her naughty bits. And I did about half of the little poochu creatures. And let's see, I was a little boy in the episode where they go bowling. He had the gigantic feet. That was me. And I was a very naughty little boy that threw rocks at Menchi in Menchi's Adventure. And I was Kumi Kumi. I'm sorry, I was Kumi Kumi, the mountain girl, the one who was chasing after Nabashin. You forgot your soup. Anyway, yeah. So that was me.
Hi. Being that you guys like actually dub the English versions of the shows, you know, do you prefer to actually watch them as dubs or as subtitled?
You go ahead first.
You know, that's a good question, because actually usually I end up watching them in the raw Japanese. I don't speak Japanese that well. I can make my way around Tokyo and find bathrooms and the important things like that. I tend to watch the dubs after we finish with the show, because I want to see what everyone's done with them, to see how it all comes to, and after that I'm kind of tired of it. So if it's a show that ADV didn't do, I'll kind of look at who did the production on it and say, okay, I like what these guys do, I'll watch the dub, or I'll watch the Japanese version. Or in some cases, if there's another language, I'll watch it in that, just to see what they've done. I really enjoy, for some reason, watching Evangelion in French. I just think that Evangelion and French is a marriage that was just meant to be, because everybody sounds like they're really, really stuck up. And it works. It works. The other one I really enjoy watching is Bubblegum Crisis Tokyo 2040 in Spanish. And I cannot tell you why. Evangelion in Spanish is also a riot. Primarily because the voice of Shinji in the Spanish version is the Spanish voice of Bart Simpson. Which is just... It strikes me. But because we're in the business we're in, we're fascinated by voices. We tend to listen to everything, even things that people wouldn't. If there's an alternate dub that was done by somebody else, we'll tend to watch that. And you want to pick up?
Well, yeah. I mean, the shows that I'm also a writer, so I do watch the shows a lot of times raw. And for just a preference of watching, I would rather watch it in English because I think that I'm missing things when I'm reading the subtitles. I don't have any aversion to listening to Japanese. I'm perfectly fine with listening to it, but I think sometimes I might miss out on some of the nuances and things like that.
And also, when you're watching like a dub that you've done or like the other people that you work with have done, do you find that like... you're watching it and then like these characters come out and you go, oh, it's just so much, so-and-so else that I work with, and you can't like really get into it because like it's this other person on the screen that you know?
That is an excellent point. Yes, I do that all the time. When I'm watching the show and I know the actors, sometimes I start thinking about the person that's doing the voice instead of the character, and sometimes it's really hard not to do that. So I'd almost rather watch something with people in it that I don't know, but I do enjoy watching, listening to things that my friends have done. But yeah, sometimes, you know, sometimes in my mind they kind of get merged together into one thing, you know, like Spike Spencer really is Shinji, and he's so nothing like Shinji Ikari at all, but you know. Have a really funny picture of him if anybody wants to see it later.
Hi. Have you guys had any influence on the recent Evangelion live-action movie that's coming out?
Can you repeat that?
Sorry.
You want to know if we had any influence on the recent Evangelion live-action feature?
Yeah, that's coming out.
I'm actually one of the co-producers on the project. Yeah, in fact,
I know that,
on our...
Richard Taylor gave a very interesting talk a little bit about that last night as well.
Yeah, actually, it's funny because we got married 2 years ago, and actually on our honeymoon, I was driving her crazy because I was constantly on telephone conference calls with Weta in the middle of the night because of that. There's not a whole lot that we can say about it right now other than say it's on, it's very on. We just had a set of meetings in Japan, and everyone is now extremely excited, so... I know Weta's, after they finish Kong, they're going to go into Halo. And then after Halo, I think it's very possible Ava will be the next thing they do after that. So was that your question specifically? Yeah. We're really excited about it. We don't have a cast. There's some people we're talking to be directors. And until there's an actual contract, we can't say. And people keep asking about, well, who'd play, you know, Shinji? And I say... It's going to depend on when the show gets into production because they're going to age. If you watch what's happening with Harry Potter right now, we're not going to finalize a cast until we go into production and have someone who's the right age for the characters. Only other thing I think you can pretty much say it's of interest right now is I think everyone is now pretty much committed to not making one movie but a trilogy. And that would be the way to get the whole story in.
And
you do not need to email me with your suggestions for who should play the characters because I have no say in that whatsoever. Thank you.
Ayo. Okay.
Hi.
Yep. How did it feel actually working with the other character, like the other voice cast members? Did you have any disputes or slight fights, or was it all just smooth sailing?
I guess I'll answer that first. We don't work with the other actors, so I have no experiences of that to report. He got to work with all of the actors because he was the director. But the actors work one at a time in a recording booth. So the actor's in the booth, and then you have the engineer and the director, and that's it. So many, many times working on a show, I won't meet or even know any of the other actors at all. And an example would be on Evangelion, I didn't meet Spike until I don't know, we had recorded well over half of the show before I even met him for the first time. So there's not a lot I can really say about working with them because we didn't do it like that.
Well, except we actually, we're doing a show right now. It's an experiment, a show called Go Danner. We're actually doing group recordings on that. It's one of the first times an entire show has been done that way in the U.S. Now, in Japan, of course, they record with everybody in a group together. And what they do is they record the whole show, a 30-minute show, twice, back-to-back, and then the director goes in and edits it together and tries to make it sort of fit the lip flaps. And the reason they do that is because of time constraints. Recording studio time in Japan is insanely expensive. It's like $1,500 an hour. So they do their system in order to minimize the amount of time in the studio. In the U.S. and most of the rest of the world, it's more practical to have the actors come in on schedule, and then you can finesse the lip flaps exactly. But in the case of Go Danner, we decided we were going to go ahead and try a modification of the Japanese system, and it's come out quite well. But yeah, usually it's only just the director and the actor there.
Just following on from that, what are the advantages and the disadvantages that you see of trying that new system, the Japanese way?
Yeah, we're not actually doing it the Japanese way, though, exactly.
Well, actually, the very first show we ever did, we did the Japanese way. That show we talked about earlier, Guy, we actually we did the entire cast there. And the disadvantage is real simple. You can't get perfect lip sync normally doing it that way because the Japanese animation is very erratic. When they actually animate the animation in Japan, the animators don't even know what the dialogue is. They've been given, oh, well, hold the mouth open for this long, and then the actors come in, and when the actors come in, they're not recording to the animation. It's still being done. So they're recording to storyboards, and the mouth flaps just don't really match. If you ever actually watched the Japanese and the mouth flaps, they're not very close. When we did the first show, we did that way. Everyone said, oh, the acting's great, but it was so out of sync. Was there something wrong with it? That's the disadvantage of that system. The advantage, obviously, is that the actors are all right there and can play off of each other. The advantage of the Western system is that you can finesse everything exactly, get exactly the right read to match all the facial nuances. In the case of Go Danner, we're not doing the Japanese system. We've combined the American and the Japanese systems. We are actually doing perfect lip sync live, which is incredibly complex. We found a couple of ways to work around it. And the only reason we can do it is we have so many people like Tiffany now who've been doing this for 10 years. And are so good at hitting lip sync. And we do it with them, and they're actually, even while they're recording together, they're in separate booths. So if someone messes up, the other person's take is still good. That was the other problem with the Japanese system. One person messes up, you got to go back and start over again. So,
all right, I'm going to ask a question. this is directed to both of you, as a director and as a voice actor, because you're recording the actual voices separately, how hard is it to keep the fluidity of the conversations between all the characters?
Well, in the end, of course, it's the director's job to make sure everything all fits together. That's why I love to point out the fact that if you've watched something like Evangelion and the relationship between Asuka and Shinji, and know that Spike and I had never met when we started doing the show. So I think that's incredible. The thing is that we have the script there right in front of us, so we know exactly what the other person is saying. And very often when I'm in the booth, what I hear is the actor that I'm playing opposite is speaking in Japanese. So sometimes my cue, depends on when I'm in the recording studio. If I'm coming in sort of near the beginning, then everything's in Japanese, and I might be the first person laying down my lines in English, and I'm listening to them in Japanese. So I can sort of hear their inflections, and I can see the reactions on the screen to go off of that, and I have the line written down, so I know what they're saying. So it does feel like there's a conversation, and I think, like Matt said, I've done this for a really long time, so the longer you do it, the more just natural it becomes. And even, I'd been doing this for about 3 years when we did Evangelion, so it wasn't a new thing for me then. And that sometimes it's kind of nice if you come in like towards the end of the recording sessions, everybody else has already done all there is in English, and then, you know, so you're actually more like having a conversation with someone in English, but the director has to listen to it and play it back and make sure that it sounds like we're all talking to each other instead of just randomly saying things.
Yeah, I've always likened the process to a jigsaw puzzle, except instead of just visual pieces, which is the matching the flaps, you're listening to what it sounds like and how the flow is, and you're trying to make it sound like there's a real conversation. One of the tricks we do, as Tiffany said, we play the Japanese track while we're recording. So even if there's not someone speaking in English, there's someone emoting opposite them that they can take an emotional cue off of. It also helps us stay closer to the flow and the feel of the original show, because the first people recording are playing off the Japanese, so they're going into that same mindset. Occasionally we will decide to change the way a scene's delivered for various reasons, and I like to point out one of the ways you can really see how this differs. If you watch the original version of Evangelion that we released, which Madman released, and the new Platinum Edition, there's 10 years of audio technology that improved between those two shows, and we had much better materials to work with when we did Platinum. So a lot of things that sound good in the original Ava are now completely seamless, because now we're able to exactly massage everything to sound exactly right spatially, so it feels like they're all in the same room. But mostly it's the actor is basically playing two parts in their head. They're imagining the conversation that they're hearing and then rolling in with the new line if it's not there.
First of all, I'm really big fans of both of these. I'm really still stoked that you guys are here.
Awesome.
Yeah.
And just be sure you hold up the mic. Yeah.
My question is, when you do the voice actors and stuff, when you get the script and when you listen to it, or the anime you do, can it be embarrassing or make you just crack up laughing from knowing what your voice actor's character's doing?
I'm trying to follow what you're saying, but I could only hear bits of it.
Okay,
now,
yeah.
You're saying from first reading the script.
Yeah.
Does it ever crack me up?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh my gosh, yes.
Like,
a lot of times.
Anything embarrassing as well? Sometimes you've got to scream to the top of your voice and stuff.
I can tell you that we were just working on a show last week. We're doing a show in the U.S. It's very, very popular. The title it's best known by right now is Oh Mikey, which is all done with mannequins. Very, very popular in Japan. They've actually got restaurants, and Vanity Fair did a 6-page layout on the Fukons. It's going to be called the Fukons for the English world. But she was reading a character, and literally, every time her line came up, she would do this.
Well, the thing was, these characters were very snooty. And periodically, it's like the mother and dad and this little boy, and I was the little boy, and periodically they're supposed to do this snickering thing, and it was like, but then it went on for a really long time, and I couldn't do it for more than like 2 seconds, and I would just burst out laughing. I never did get through it. I think they ended up just like copying a bunch of stuff that I did and pasting it all together, because I could not read the line. So yeah, that does happen to me sometimes, that it just... I'm trying to read it, and it's really funny, because see, we don't get these scripts in advance. You know, you go into the studio and you're seeing it there for the first time when you're doing it, so it still can be very funny.
All right, guys, that's the end of this session. Please thank Tiffany Grant and Matt Greenfield.
You've been listening to the Supernova podcast presented by Joffrey Street Productions. Music by Yun Yu. Visit www.yunyu.com.au. Hosted by Cool Shite on the Tube crew. Visit www.coolshite.net. Check out Supernova at www.supanova.com.au. For questions, comments and inquiries, email supernova@coolshite.net.